crossing a red light. Most people go through life without a brush with the law. But there is a very small minority who seem to devote their entire careers to hating cops and statute books. They usually matriculate at San Quentin and then take a postgraduate course in Leavenworth. And some of them end up in a death house due to a slight case of murder.
That's the Fat Man. Dashiell Hammett's fascinating and exciting character. A fast-moving criminologist who tipped the scales at 237 pounds. Brought to you by the Norwich Pharmacal Company, makers of Pepto-Bismol, Unguentine, and other fine drug products. Rents the flat.
The lady was attractive in a distinctly unusual way. She was the kind of a woman who could make a 2350 dress look like an original Schiaparelli. But the gown she wore didn't come from any bargain basin. She walked into my office and sat down very quietly in a chair in front of my desk. Then she glanced at her impeccably manicured fingernails for a moment and began to talk.
My name is Cynthia Pryor. I was told that the Fat Man was the best private detective in town.
I'll take the bow, sitting down.
I imagine you're handy with a revolver, but are you tactful?
I don't embarrass my client, if that's what you mean.
I have a case for you, Mr. Runyon. A case of blackmail.
Who's being squeezed? And who's doing the squeezing?
A man named George Brandon. He's demanding money from me.
Why?
We've been friends up to now, but he threatened to tell my husband that his friendship was more than a passing fancy.
How did you meet up with this guy?
Oh, it was accidental in a cocktail lounge. I dropped my purse and he...
Picked you both up.
Mr. Runyon.
No offense, Contender. I just like my story straight and to the point, that's all.
Well, at any rate, he's demanding $20,000.
George is no piker.
My husband is rich, but I don't have that much money of my own. I could never get it. Besides, if I give him to George now, it may not be his last demand.
Well, why don't you tell your husband? That seems to be the best way out, if you really have nothing to hide.
Oh, Harold would never believe me. He wanted a divorce, and, well, I love him much too much to take the chance.
Well, in that case, I guess we'll go up and see George.
Will
you? Sure. You're coming along. We'll have to talk him out of it, and I'll need your help.
All right. When can we see him?
Well, now is as good a time as any.
I'm ready, Mr. Runyon. Oh, here's your fee in advance. What are you doing?
Checking my gun.
Will there be trouble?
In a case like this, Mrs. Meyer, there usually is. We drove to a three-story white stone house in the 70s. One of those remodeled old mansions that were turned into apartments. George Brandon's name was over a mail slot together with his floor number. And Mrs. Pryor and I started walking upstairs. You've been here before?
Oh, once or twice. George has the flat on the second floor.
Has your husband ever seen this guy at all?
Not that I know of, Mr. Renner. There it is.
He seems to be out.
Well, he couldn't be. I spoke to him just before I came to see you. I told him to wait for my call. There's usually a key under that door, Matt.
Yeah, you're right. There's one here now. Does he do that often?
What?
Leave his key for you?
Mr. Runyon, I swear that my relationship with George was purely platonic. It was when he tried to draw me into something closer, like leaving keys under doormats so that I could come in when I pleased, that I tried to break away from him.
Well, we may as well wait for him inside where it's comfortable. Yeah. Looks as if someone got to your conniving boyfriend before we did. He's got at least four bullets in his chest.
That's not George Brandon.
Huh?
It's my husband.
I put in a call to Lieutenant McKenzie and went through the flat while I waited for him to arrive. Mrs. Pryor just sat there. She'd been hit by a mallet. George Brandon must have been pretty successful in his racket, judging by his wardrobe. His dresser drawers were filled with monogrammed shirts from Fifth Avenue men's shops, and his closets were jammed with snappy suits. There was a brand new suitcase with his initials on it in his bedroom. It was open, but it hadn't been filled. I brought that point up to McKenzie after he'd gone through the usual routine.
Now, what does this guy Brandon look like, Mrs. Pryor?
Tall and heavy set.
Mm-hmm.
Brown hair, brown eyes. A scar on his left hand.
Yeah.
I don't know what else to tell you.
You feeling all right?
Yes, I just need to know.
She called a friend of her husband's, mate. A man named Lucius Farr. He's coming down to take her home.
Well, just one more question, Mrs. Farr. Would you know where Brandon might be right now?
I haven't the slightest idea.
Oh, that suitcase inside, Mac. It looks as though it was open to be packed.
It's a cinch he won't be back to finish the job. I'll take that. Yes? What? All right. Hold on to it. If Brandon shows up, don't tell him you called here. This is Detective Lieutenant McKenzie speaking. Police Homicide Bureau. Give Brandon his ticket and alert the airport police. We'll be there before his plane takes off.
What's up, Mike?
That was the Airport Reservation Bureau. They're calling to verify a ticket reservation they're holding for George Brandon on a 7 o'clock plane to San Francisco.
Think he'll walk into your arms?
Well, he might. Joe, Johnny, get that body out of here.
Okay, Lieutenant.
Doc Prentice is waiting at the morgue to make an autopsy. Get in touch with me later, Brand. I'll tell you what goes.
Okay, Mike.
Easy now. I'll take it.
Feeling better, Mrs. Pryor?
Yes, I feel a little stronger.
You'll have to identify George Brandon if they have him.
What, tonight?
Maybe.
Well, I don't think I'm up to it, Mr. Runyon. I feel a little
hot. Mrs. Pryor. I grabbed her as she started to sink to the floor in a faint and carried her to the couch. She was out like a light, and it took me 5 minutes to bring her around. When she came to, she started to cry. And I was relieved when a friend, Lucius Farr, showed up. He was a promoter type. Big deals, big money, and big heads. And he purred over Cynthia Pryor like a cat over a kitten.
Cynthia. Cynthia, my dear. I have never been so shocked in all my life.
He was a shot, Lucius. He was cold-blooded murder.
What was Harold doing in this apartment? Who lives here?
A guy named Brandon. Ever hear him?
Brandon? No.
George and Lucius never met.
Was he a friend of Harold?
I wouldn't call pumping four bullets into a man a gesture of friendship.
Cynthia, I'm going to get you home.
Yes.
You'd better remain at home where I can reach you, Mrs. Pryor.
Very well, Mr. Brandon.
And incidentally, you'd better give me that key to this apartment. The police may want to come back and have another look around. Oh, by the way, Mr. Pryor, how well did you know Harold Pryor?
Lucius
has known both of us for years, Mr. Runyon.
Yes, I have done quite a bit of business with Mr. Pryor. I feel his loss very deeply in more ways than one. I certainly hope you put your hands on that killer, Runyon. I'd like to be there in the death house myself when Harold's killer is electrocuted.
You never can tell, Mr. Pryor. Sometimes it can be arranged. It was 8 o'clock by the time I got back to my own apartment. And I thought I'd give Lieutenant McKenzie a call. He told me George Brandon never showed to pick up his ticket, and they were spreading a dragnet through the city from borough to borough. When I hung up, I started to read the papers. Somehow, I just couldn't concentrate on the news. The case seemed open and shut practically everyone, including myself. Yep, there was something that bothered me. And I couldn't put my finger on it. I was going over Brandon's apartment once again in my mind when my doorbell rang. And I found I had an unexpected visitor who was rather easy on the eyes.
You the fat man?
Yeah. Runyon is the name.
I'm Ellery Wilson. I was Mr. Pryor's private secretary.
Oh. Well, come in.
Thank you. I heard about that. Mr. Pryor's death a little while ago when I called his home. Mrs. Pryor told me what happened.
Yeah?
A man named Lucius Farr was just leaving Mrs. Pryor when I spoke to her on the phone. Have you met him, Mr. Runyon?
Yeah. An hour or two ago.
There's something I think you ought to know about Mr. Farr.
Is there?
He went into several business deals with Mr. Pryor. One of the deals, the last one they made, turned out rather badly.
For whom?
Mr. Pryor. He lost a lot of money. Wasn't much for him, of course. He was so rich. But it was what he discovered about Mr. Farr that hurt the most.
What was that?
Lucius Farr had misrepresented himself. Mr. Pryor lost his money because he'd been swindled. Well?
Well, what?
Doesn't that ring any bells?
There's one or two dull ones.
What do you mean?
Are you trying to put Lucius Farr in a chair, Miss Wilson?
I'm only telling you what I know.
The police are convinced the killer's a man named George Brandon.
Who's George Brandon?
That's a guy who's in hot water at the moment.
What are you staring at?
Your clothes.
Well, what about them?
It's a nice coat you have on. That kind of fur doesn't run into less than four fat figures. How much do private secretaries get these days? 50,000?
What are you driving at?
I was just thinking. Oh, excuse me, sweetheart. Sit down. Make yourself at home. Hello.
Mr. Runyon, this is Sylvia Pryor.
They haven't found George Brandon yet.
I know they haven't. He called me a little while ago and asked for money.
Where did he call from?
He didn't say, but I told him to come over and get it. I pretended I knew nothing about the murder. Now I'm frightened. I'm alone in the house. You've got to get over here immediately.
Well, how long ago did you speak to him?
Just before I called you.
Well, maybe he's farther away from your place than I am. I'll drive over as fast as I can.
George.
Hello?
George!
Mrs. Pryor. Hello. Hello.
And now let's catch up with the Fat Man.
I decided I'd better look into this David Parcel thing. So I found out from Marie where he lived and checked there first. He hadn't gotten home from work yet, and I was sent to a neighborhood restaurant where he usually ate. But he hadn't been seen there either. So I called it a day. The next morning, I went over to the plant where he was. David Clark was not there. Nor had he been there the day before. Not so good for Mr. Clark. I went down to my office and was about to call the police to put out the dragnet when the phone rang in my office. Ryan, you're talking.
This is Marie. And Marie Girard. I've got to see you.
What's up, Marie?
I can't tell you on the phone. Could you come down here?
I'll hop a cab right away. Marie, have you heard anything from Dave Clark?
No. I don't know where he is.
Have you tried to reach him?
Yes. He didn't get home last night.
Yeah, I know. Okay, I'll be right over. It was raining outside. My car was put up for the night, and I couldn't get a cab. By the time I'd fought the subway crowd and finally walked from the square to the clock shop, nearly an hour had gone by. I opened the door to the shop. There was nobody around. I called, and there was no answer. Nothing but those clocks ticking. All of a sudden, I got a funny smell. Gas. Coming from the room back to the shop. I dashed back there and into the sitting room. There was Marie lying on the couch and gas pouring out of a heater by the wall. Everything was shut up tight. I made a quick dive for the window. I picked up Marie, and after a few gulps of fresh air, she came to. What do you find it? Is Miss Suicide turning on the heater with the window shut?
But I didn't turn it on.
You didn't?
No. I'm sure I didn't. I remember I was a little cool, but...
Well, who did turn it on then?
I don't know.
Now, look. Look, Marie. Count 10 and tell me exactly what happened. Don't skip a thing.
Well, after I phoned you, I felt a little tired. I didn't get much sleep last night thinking about Papa, so I thought I'd lie down a while.
Is anybody here?
Anything, and of course that's police. But they both left. So I lay down on the couch and I fall asleep, that's it.
Did you hear anyone come in?
I thought I heard the shop bell once, just faintly, but maybe I was dreaming. That's all I remember, so you were holding me by the open window.
What was it you told me about?
It was about your grandfather's clock, Mr. Emmons.
What about it?
Come out in the shop, I'll show you. Look.
It's running again.
It was running this morning.
Did you start it?
No, I never touched it.
Well, somebody did. Because somebody's put that other counterweight back. Murderous little weapon, isn't it? And it's 6-2, and even you won't find a print on it.
Mr. Runyon, what does it mean?
I don't know yet.
First Papa and then the gas. I don't understand.
Miss Marie, that wasn't an accident. Somebody knew you called me. Decided they had more to do.
Marie?
David! Oh, Dave, where have you been? I've been trying to...
No, darling, I just got back.
You've heard about Papa.
Yes. Marie, I'm so sorry.
I know you are. Oh, David, this is Mr. Runyon, Brad Runyon.
Oh, I've heard about you, Mr. Runyon.
Yeah, and I've heard about you, too. Where'd you disappear to yesterday?
I was out of town.
I don't suppose you'd object to telling us where you were.
Mr. Runyon?
Look, Marie, you happen to be in love with a guy, but the cops aren't, and neither am I, until I know why he took a powder on us yesterday.
He's right, honey. He's got to question everybody. The only trouble, Mr. Runyon, I'm not going to tell you.
Oh, that's the way it is.
That's the way it is.
Look here, young fellow. You're coming with me, and you're going to talk. Or you're going to try on a pair of bracelets that didn't come from Tiffany.
Oh, Mr. Runyon, no.
You stay here, Marie. I'll be back soon. Well, David Clark talked. He said he'd gone out of town on an errand for Papa Gerard. Papa wanted him to see about a place for Aunt Felice to live with a family out in the country. Because after David and Marie were married and came to live in the shop, there'd be no room for Felice. So I sent him home, making it clear he'd better stay there. And suddenly, something clicked. He didn't know it, but while he was talking, for the first time, I saw a motive. And I went back to the shop.
Is there something you want?
Not a thing, mademoiselle. Just thought I'd stop in and see how Marie was feeling.
She's in the back. I was just going out to do my marketing.
Well, you go right ahead.
Monsieur, have you found out anything yet about my poor brother?
Well, it takes time. Mademoiselle, are you sure you didn't mean something yesterday when you said we killed him?
Oh, no, I don't know why I said it. The shock. One is not young anymore, monsieur, and things come into the head. Oh, monsieur, if only this clock could talk. All those faces, every one of them talk.
Sometimes clocks do talk, mademoiselle. Now I'm going back to Marie. Hello, Marie.
Mr. Runyon, where's David?
I came home. I wanted to see you alone. Marie, how game are you?
What do you mean?
Well, I'm going to force the murderer's hand. The only way to do it is to use you as bait.
What do you want me to do, Mr. Runyon?
The things you always do. Close up the shop, put out the light, go to bed. The only difference, leave the door to the shop unlocked. I'm coming in.
Why?
I want to give the killer a chance to operate. But don't fall asleep. And if you hear anything in your room, yell your head off. What about it?
I'll do it. Whatever you say.
Night, I called David Clark and told him to meet me. We went to the shop and waited outside till the lights went out, and Marie and I had gone to bed. I tried the door. It was unlocked the way I'd told her to leave it. Now, wait, young fellow. Let me get a hold of that bell. You go ahead. You go on in. I'll shut the door. We go over behind the counter and don't fall over anything. Yes,
ma'am.
Right here.
I can't see a thing.
Well, you listen. You remember, I have a gun. You know how to use it.
You still don't think that I can.
Don't talk. And don't move. You see, we stood there for an hour. And it's pitch dark. Showing nothing but those clocks. I began to feel a little uneasy. And you were throwing a gun at me. And all of a sudden, you.
Darn it. Somebody's coming.
No, stay where you are. There wasn't a sound. What it was, you were around that shop like a cat. I turned to David. He was gone.
Mr. Runyon! Help! Mr. Runyon! Somebody's in the room!
Why are the lights?
The switch. Tied the door. David. It's David.
Marie.
Stay where you are. I told you I had a gun.
Mr. Runyon, David's got the weight from the clock.
Okay, mister. Talk and talk fast. What are you doing with that lead weight?
I stumbled over it when I ran in here. I picked it up.
Why did you come back here? I told you to stay with me.
I got scared for Marie when I heard that bell.
I came to see if she was all right. Somebody else was in the room and must have run out when I came in.
Did you see who it was?
No.
Oh, David, it was that weight from the clutch that was used to kill Papa.
What's wrong? Mr. Onion, what's wrong?
Aldo.
What are you doing here, Aldo?
I hear the Signorina scream. Like before, I run in.
You're a little sudden, aren't you?
No, no.
Mr. Onion, that's police. Why hasn't she waked up? Do you suppose she's all right?
Where's her room?
Right there, down the hall.
Come on.
Oh, there she is. She's asleep.
She's not asleep, Marie. Pull back the covers.
The covers?
Yeah, like this.
She's dressed?
Yep. Fully dressed. And as wide awake as you are. Okay, mademoiselle, you can open your eyes. It's the end of the line.
Oh, yes. Then you know.
Yeah. I've known ever since this afternoon.
Do you mean Aunt Felice killed Papa?
That's right. She's the one, Marie.
No, no, I can't believe it. Why?
I'll tell you why. Because he was putting me out of my home. Because he was sending me away. After all these years I've lived here.
But we thought you'd like to live in the country.
You were all against me, every one of you. You took away the only thing I had. You didn't know. You didn't know. Mon Dieu, I would go with
that thing. She's out of her mind.
Yeah. She thought she was fighting for her home. Played on her till something snapped. They'll put her away, Marie.
But how did you know?
I didn't know, except something she said yesterday. I didn't seem to fit.
What did she say?
She said he killed him when she came back to the market.
Oh, yes.
All we told her was that Papa Gerard was killed. That doesn't mean murder. He might have been hit by a car or something falling off a building. How did she know he'd been murdered? Nobody told her. When I found out why Dave went out of town, it suddenly added up.
And it was Aunt Felice in my room just now.
Yeah. After she'd gone to the shop and opened the door to make it look like somebody from the outside. And it was Aunt Felice who turned on the gas when you were sleeping and planted the cigarette case of Dave.
And she's the one who dropped the clock weight in Marie's room.
Yeah. David, go put in a call from McKenzie at police headquarters.
I can't believe it. She's like someone I never saw before. Mr. Lennon, what did this to
her? It's a funny thing, the human mind, Marie. Like those clocks inside, it's a very delicate piece of work. You wind it up too tight, and sometimes something snaps.
And we'll be right back.
When my kid brother and I were very young, we learned, by way of a sound spanking, never to play with a
crooked horse. And now, here is the fat man.
You know, if a young man told me he wanted to be a detective and asked my advice, I think the most important thing I could tell him would be this. The life of a real detective isn't made up of silk dressing gowns, briar pipes, and intricate clues any more than the life of a real soldier is made up of pretty uniforms, parades, and bugle calls. They're both tough, hard businesses. And no matter what the sweetness and light boys say, it just isn't the fact that every criminal has a yellow streak down his back any more than it was true that every enemy soldier was a coward at heart. Sure, there are yellow crooks, but not all of them. Because it stands to reason that a job of violence simply won't appeal to a man who scares easily. And believe me, whether you like it or not, this is a more mighty important thing to know when you're dealing with a murderer. The girl wasn't beautiful, but there was a straightforwardness about her that spelled brains. There wasn't any coyness or fear in her voice, and she looked me straight in the eye. I liked her. She tossed her perky little hat on my desk and tapped a cigarette on the back of her hand.
I heard a murder in room 610 of the Parker Hotel at 2:30 this morning.
Oh, this isn't the police station, Miss...
Farley. The police wouldn't be interested, Mr. Runyon.
Oh, why not?
Because the body of the dead man is gone. The hotel doesn't think there was a murder. In fact, the night clerk says there wasn't anybody registered in room 610.
Oh, what's your interest in the matter?
Well, what would you do if you heard somebody in the next room to yours murdered? Heard a door slam, heard running footsteps go down the hall, and when you looked through the keyhole, saw a dead man staring at you?
I'd either go back to sleep and see if I couldn't have a nicer dream, or I'd go downstairs and tell a hotel clerk.
It wasn't a dream, and I went down to see the clerk. He looked at the register, and there was nobody listed in room 610. We went upstairs. The room was empty.
Did it look as if it had been occupied?
No. That's why I came to you. Something very peculiar happened in that room last night, and I'm sure a man was killed.
You said you heard this murder. What do you mean? Did something wake you up?
No. I was in bed reading when I heard a knock on the door of the room next to mine. The door opened, and I heard a man's voice say, "A thousand and one pardons, but have you the time?" Another man's voice answered, "But of course, the time is now."
Well, that doesn't make much sense. You're sure you heard that?
Yes. It sounded so strange that I continued listening closely. I heard footsteps in the room, and then there was a slight pause. Suddenly, the second voice said, "White." There was another pause, and the first man answered, "Black." And then I heard an exclamation of surprise or anger.
From black or white?
I couldn't tell. Almost immediately, I heard a soft popping noise as if someone had set off a very weak firecracker. Then I heard a groan of pain and the slam of the door. Footsteps ran down the hall quickly. By the time I opened my door, the hall was empty. You know the rest.
Did you get a good look at the man's face through the keyhole?
Yes. It was directly in front of the keyhole. He was sitting in a chair facing the door. His body had slumped back, but his head was hanging to one side. His eyes were wide open.
Light was on in the room?
Yes, but it was off when I came back with the clerk.
And there wasn't anything in the room that looked suspicious?
Nothing. What do you make of it, Mr. Runyon?
I think the hotel people are probably right. I think you had a very realistic nightmare.
I tell you, it wasn't a nightmare. I'm positive of it.
Why so positive?
Because this morning I stopped at the hotel desk and looked in the box of room 610. If that room had been unoccupied, there would have been a key there. The box was empty, Mr. Runyon.
I'd like to see the clerk who was on duty at the desk here last night. Where can I find him?
I was on duty last night. What's wrong?
That's what I want you to tell me.
I don't understand.
Can we talk first a little more private?
Yes, I guess so. Just let me...
Well, I have a bit of a problem, and perhaps you can help me.
Oh, yes, sir. Just a second, please.
Okay.
What is it, sir?
I suppose you think I'm silly, but you see, I am a very light sleeper. The slightest noise awakens me, and I have great difficulty in getting back to sleep. Now, I'm a very busy man, and most certainly I need my rest.
Oh, I'm sorry, sir.
I am already registered here in the hotel. Walker is my name.
Oh, yes, sir.
My room is directly on the street, and it is quite noisy. I was wondering if I might not have another room. One on the back near the corridor?
Well, I don't know, sir.
Room 610. I noticed it as I came out this morning. It seems to be in a position where it would be quieter than one of the others.
Room 610? Well, I don't know, sir. Just a second. I'm sorry, sir, but room 610 is reserved.
Reserved?
Yes, sir. I'm afraid there are no other vacancies on that floor. Perhaps in some other
But
floor.
Perhaps I could have the room just for the afternoon. I really feel that I could rest there.
Well, I'm sorry, sir, but that's quite out of the question.
I see. Well, thank you.
Sorry, sir.
A popular room, isn't it?
Beg your pardon, sir?
Room 610. Isn't that the room the young lady thought she heard a murder in last night?
Afraid I don't follow you.
Didn't you say you were on duty here last night?
That's right.
Were you the only clerk?
Of course.
Didn't a girl registered in room 608 come down about 2 o'clock this morning to tell you she'd heard a murder committed in room 610, the room next to hers? Didn't you both go back and find the room empty?
No. I don't understand. I didn't see any girl early this morning. What's more, I didn't leave the desk all night.
I lit a cigarette and walked to the far end of the lobby where I could watch the clerk at the desk. 10 minutes passed. Then another clerk came on duty, and my boy said a few words to him and walked across the lobby to an empty elevator.
The door shut. The hand on the dial swung slowly around to number 10 and stopped. There was another elevator standing open. I got in and rode up to the sixth floor. The corridor was empty. I took a passkey out of my pocket and walked slowly down past room 608 and stopped in front of 610. The passkey worked fine. I went into 610 and locked the door behind me. It was a typical second-rate hotel room. A double bed, a couple of chairs, a desk with some aged writing paper, and an unused Gideon Bible. A chest of drawers stood against one wall. Ill-fitting, faded wallpaper of an ancient hunting scene looked down on the room from all sides. I tried the breast of drawers first. Three hairpins, a silk stocking with a run, and the stub of a theater ticket were all I found. The desk was empty, and there was nothing under the mattress or the ragged throw rug in the center of the floor. On top of the desk stood a glass bowl of artificial flowers. My elbow was resting on the desk, 6 inches from it, when a key slipped into the lock of the door. My arm jerked around and hit the bowl. The key went out of the lock and footsteps ran off down the hall. The corridor was empty when I opened the door. I closed it and locked it. Then I walked next door to 608.
Oh, come in, Mr. Runyon. Have you learned anything yet?
Maybe.
What?
How long have you been here in your room?
A couple of hours, I guess. Why?
Hear anything in the next room? The one where you thought you heard the murder last night?
Oh, no. I haven't heard anything in there. Why? Did you think that...
I don't know. Something isn't adding up, sweetheart.
What do you mean?
I mean, the night clerk told me he didn't see you last night. And he didn't come up here to the room next door.
What? But that's ridiculous. Of course he did. He's lying.
Are you sure he's the one who's lying?
Of course. Wait a minute. You don't think that I'm lying?
Yeah, sweetheart.
But I'm not, I tell you. Why should I lie about that?
That's what I'd like to find out.
I don't understand. Why on earth would that clerk lie to you?
A little early in the day for martinis, isn't it?
What are you talking about?
This cocktail glass. You know, a cocktail glass with water on it makes a swell dictaphone if you press the glass against the wall, put your ear to the stem.
What do you mean?
I mean that you didn't accidentally hear anything in room 610 last night. You did hear something. You were using this glass and you were listening. Why?
But I tell you
that...
Look,
sweetheart. I just knocked a bowl of flowers over in that room, and you didn't even hear that.
You were in just in room 610?
Yes. Somebody stuck a key in the door just before the flowers went over. It couldn't have been you, could it?
Why, no. What did you find in the room?
Nothing. What did you think I might find?
I don't.
Now, come clean. If you want my help, you've got to tell me the truth. What's it all about? Why were you listening against the wall last night?
I can't tell you that.
Okay, honey. It's been nice knowing you.
Oh, no, wait. Please, I need your help.
Well, then talk. And talk straight.
All right. I guess there isn't anything else for me to do. Promise me, though. Please give me your word that you'll keep secret what I'm going to tell you. It's very important. More important than you know.
Okay.
I'm a United States secret agent.
Can you prove it?
Oh, of course not. He's not here. Obviously, I can't carry identification. When I'm on a mission, I'm completely on my own. Funds are deposited in a certain bank for me, and I use them in any manner I see fit to achieve my ends. This morning, I saw fit to hire you because I need help.
The peculiar occurrences in the next room are, of course, part of the job they're working on.
Of course.
Hmm. A swell story.
It's a true one. Mr. Runyon, I really need your help. Won't you please believe me?
Maybe I'm a sap. Okay, I'll play it blind. What's the setup?
Well, the man who was murdered last night is an important foreign agent. He arrived from Europe yesterday and came to this hotel.
I followed him and got this room next to his. Now, there's another agent of the same government already operating in this country, but we don't know who he is. Some time ago, we discovered that he had come into possession of a very valuable secret paper, a formula which our government alone had. The man in the next room was to contact this unknown agent and then return to Europe.
And your job was to stop him?
Yes. When the door opened last night and I heard the strange password, I thought, of course, that the unknown agent had arrived.
But it wasn't the right man.
No. Whoever entered that room last night was obviously trying to impersonate the real agent. When he failed to give the correct countersign to the second password, the man in the next room must have reached for a gun and the imposter was forced to kill him.
Have you any idea who the murderer might be?
He's probably an agent for some other foreign power who had even more information than we did. At least he knew one of the passwords, which is more than I knew.
It's possible that the contact had already been made without your knowledge, and the murdered man had the paper.
I don't see how the contact could have been made without my knowledge.
Well, that would have been easy. The secret paper could have been hidden in the room waiting for the man from Europe. I don't think that happened, though.
Why not?
Because I think I saw the murderer down in the lobby a little while ago. He said his name was Walker. He was anxious to rent room 610. He said he was registered in the hotel.
Then the paper must still be in the room.
I went over it pretty carefully and didn't find anything. That's why I don't think it was hidden there. I think the other agent, the one who was supposed to contact the man from Europe, still has it. I think he found the body and guessed what had happened. Maybe he didn't know whether the dead man was his agent or was somebody his agent had killed. At any rate, he knew he had to get rid of the body.
But how? Where?
Now listen to me.
Yes.
You stay here with your wine glass. Keep your ear on the next room.
Well, where are you going?
Down to the lobby. I want to find out which room this fellow Walker is registered in.
But the body. You said you knew that...
I said I think I know. It would be easy if the real agent happened to be the right person.
The right person? What do you mean?
I mean the night clerk.
Can I help you, sir?
Yeah. I'm looking for a fellow who works here as night clerk.
Mr. Evans.
Yeah, that's the fellow. Is he around here now?
Why, he went off duty a little while ago. He was on all night, so I imagine he's asleep in his room.
What room does he have?
He's in 1003.
Thanks.
Not at all, sir.
Oh, by the way, I believe there's an old friend of mine here in the hotel. His name is Walker. I wonder if you could tell me what room he's in, too.
Certainly, sir. Just a second. Walker, I don't seem to... Oh, yes. This must be your friend. Henry Walker?
Yeah, that's the one.
Well, I'm afraid you're too late, sir. Mr. Walker checked out of the hotel about half an hour ago.
Walker's gone. Checked out.
Gone? Then he did find the paper.
I don't think so.
But why would he leave then?
I think he was worried about the missing body. When he realized the murder hadn't been discovered, he came down and tried to rent the room where the body had been. Was told the room was vacant, but was reserved. What would you do in a case like that?
You mean he guessed that the night clerk must be the unknown agent?
Exactly. And he must have realized that the clerk would suspect him for trying to get the room. So he checked out and moved to a safer place. But I think he'll be back, either to see the clerk or to look that room over again.
Where's the clerk now?
He's asleep in his room. You hear anything next door?
No, nothing. But if the clerk is the other agent, we ought to...
You're cheap. Right now, I want to look the murder room over again. See if I can find the missing body.
That's the chair the dead man was sitting in when I looked through the keyhole.
Yeah, I know.
What are you going to do?
I'm going to try and figure something out. After you heard the muffled popping sound, which must have been a gun with a silencer, you heard the door slam. Then you heard running footsteps going away, right?
Yes. And by the time I opened my door, the corridor was empty. This door was locked. It was about 15 minutes later that the clerk and I came back up here.
So if the clerk happened to be on his way up here when you were going down, he could have passed you in the elevator.
Then he discovered the body.
Exactly. A dead man is hard to move. It didn't take the clerk long to hide the body, so it must be near here. Maybe the room across the hall. Let's take a look.
Nobody there.
Hotel maid probably thought, too. He's a smart boy, that clerk. Look.
Yes. That's the man. The man I followed from the airport. The man sitting in the chair.
Stiff as a poker. He was shot all right. Right in the heart. Here. Help me go through his pockets.
All right. Had a suitcase when you arrived. Not in the room.
The clerk probably got rid of it or took it to his own room. He could carry that where he couldn't carry a body. You see anything here that looks like your secret paper?
No. No, it's not here.
The clerk's probably got it, or it's still hidden somewhere in the murder room.
What are you doing?
I'm going to cover this dead man up again. The chances are the body won't be discovered now for another 12 or more hours. I want you to go back to your room. Keep watching the room where this fellow was killed.
What are you going to do?
I think it's time I had a talk with the night clerk. I stopped in front of the clerk's room and listened. No sound came from inside. Nothing happened. I slipped my hand inside my coat, pulled my gun from the shoulder holster. Then I tried the door. It wasn't locked. The room was dark because the shades were pulled down, but it wasn't dark enough to hide the figure of a man sprawling grotesquely on the bed, his head hanging limply toward the floor. I groped for the light switch. It was Evans, the clerk. One of his hands clutched the rumpled sheet. The other was folded beneath him. A bright trail of blood slid down the side of the bed and formed a dark pool on the floor. I closed the door with my foot and looked around the room. Two suitcases lay on the floor, their contents beside them in a jumbled heap. Drawers had been emptied, pillows slashed, rugs pulled up, pictures pulled down. The killer hadn't missed a trick. From the completeness of the search, it was pretty obvious he hadn't found what he was looking for. I switched off the light, locked the door, and started running for the stairs at the end of the hall. There wasn't time to wait for the elevator. The gun was still in my hand when I opened the door of the girl's room on the sixth floor. She was gone. An overturned chair lay on the floor near the door, the broken cocktail glass beside it. Everything else looked in order. Slipping the safety on my gun, I turned once more toward the hall. And I stopped. Something moved behind the closed door of the bathroom. I yanked it open and stepped back. The girl lay on her side on the floor, her hands and feet tied with stockings. A wash rag stuffed in her mouth served as a gag. Now, just a second. I'll have these off. There we are.
We've got to stop him. He hasn't found the papers yet. Quick. I tie my hands.
Right, right. What happened?
Why, it was only a minute or two after you left. I was standing near the door, holding the glass against the wall, listening. Suddenly, I heard someone fumbling at the door of the room next door. I opened my door as quietly as possible to look out in the hall, but he must have heard me. He was standing right in front of me, gun in his hand.
You didn't scream?
No. He hit me, and that's all I remember until just a second ago. I don't know how long I was unconscious.
It wasn't long. I wasn't gone more than 15 or 20 minutes.
But that's long enough. He hadn't found the paper, and that's why he came back. The clerk, what about him?
Dead. Just before I got there.
And the clerk didn't have it after all. It was hidden in the room next door. Walker's had time by now. He must have found it.
Don't be so sure. Unless Walker is smarter than I think he is, the formula is still there.
But where?
I don't know yet. But we're going to have another good look at that room.
He certainly went through everything.
Yeah. It was the same in the clerk's room.
But he must have found the formula. Why, there's no place else to look. He's even slashed the mattress open.
Yeah, he opened it twice. He went through the pillows twice, too. If he had found it, why go through the whole room twice?
Oh, I see what you mean. Then you think it's still here?
I'm sure of it.
But there's nowhere else to look. It's impossible that a piece of paper with that much writing on it could still be hidden in here.
No, you're wrong.
I don't understand.
Well, look at it this way. The easiest way in the world to fool people is by what you might call misplaced attention.
Then you mean there isn't any paper in this room?
Exactly. I told you that clerk was smart. He knew if anyone searched for the formula, they'd naturally look for a piece of paper. That's what I mean by misdirected attention. The formula's here, all right, but it isn't on a hidden piece of paper in an envelope. That's why Walker and I didn't find it.
You mean it might be written on the ceiling or...
Nothing screwed to that.
You know where it is?
I think so.
Well, where?
Look at the wall. Doesn't anything strike you as off-key?
The wall? You mean...
Sure. I mean the wallpaper. Here. Look here at this strip of paper behind the bed. Mm-hmm. See this figure of a horse?
Yes.
The horse is split in two where the paper joins. The hind part is nearly an inch lower than the front part. Near the ceiling, the wall shows through. No paper hanger would be that careless.
Then there is a paper after all, and it's behind the wallpaper.
No, there isn't a paper behind there. That would show, like a bulge. Unless I miss my guess, the formula is written directly on the back of that strip of wallpaper.
Quick, let's see.
No, not so fast. It might tear. Here, I got a knife. There. Look.
Yes. Yes, it is. It's the formula. Quickly, let me have it.
Thank you, my friend.
Walker.
Oh, so you came back.
Put your hands over your heads quickly.
How did you get...
I'm better at opening doors quietly than you are, my dear. So you really were an agent. And I, like a stupid fool, thought you were merely the guest in the next room. I should have killed you then.
You've done too much killing already, Walker. Or whatever your real name is.
I have more to do, too. Very clever of you to find the formula. You would make an excellent man for this type of work.
I like my type better.
Keep your hands up high. Now turn around slowly, facing me. That's good. Now, you, fat man, drop the formula on the floor in front of you, but keep your hands high.
Okay.
Excellent. Excellent. Now I will just pick it up.
Now you will get what you
can. There. Not fast enough, son.
He took an awful chance kicking him when he bent over. He might still have been able to shoot.
This life has made up for chances, sweetheart. Besides, I used to drop kick for my college football team.
Is he dead?
Yeah.
That shot. Somebody must have heard it. Quick, we've got to get out of here. Here, give me the phone.
Well, not so fast. I think I'll just hang on to this piece of wallpaper.
But you can't. Give it to me. I've got to return it. Don't you see? Please, quickly, before somebody comes.
I'd be a fool to give you this paper. How do I know who you really are? All I've got is your word that you're an American agent.
But I am, I tell you. I am.
Maybe. But I'm keeping the paper.
No, please. It's important. It's got to get back to Washington.
I still like your face, baby. Nice and looks honest. There's a fire escape back there by the window. Somebody from the lobby will be here in a minute. I'll see that the formula gets to Washington and stays out of this business.
But these murders, these bodies...
Leave that to me. If you're on the level, you'll be okay. You can keep on working and nobody will ever know who you are. You're not on the level. Well, that's the chance I take for liking your face. Besides, you haven't killed anybody. I'll get going.
All right. But please see that the formula gets to Washington. Now, here's an address. Just take it there. That's all. Do you understand?
Yeah, I understand, sweetheart. Move.
Goodbye. And thank you.
Forget it, baby. Operator, get me Sergeant O'Hara at police headquarters, quick.
Speaking.
Runyon O'Hara. I'm in room 610 of the Parker Hotel with a dead man.
What, again?
He's a murderer. You better hurry, O'Hara.
Just a second. Hurry, O'Hara. This is important. Maybe hard to explain. The others, too.
What others?
The other two dead bodies hidden here in the hotel.
What? You must be crazy. I can't help you get out of...
Yes, you can, O'Hara. You've got to. The fate of a nation is riding again.
Are you drunk? What's that mean?
It means that I've got to make a very important trip to Washington, O'Hara. A very, very important trip. Thank you.